Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Pretty good. That's the best one yet.
I am short.
Pizza, pizza.
Big O! Showtime!
I'll just have to tell them I'm not a thief, just a pervert.
I like sweet meat.
It's about fucking time someone else is.
I don't put out as regularly.
Quarter pound of meat in his mouth.
Are you a big hand from young in the kitchen? I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a Little Thing Tech Show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies down a Lincoln path. For the stream link, go direct to DLFGS.org. And the IC channel is a LinuxLink.net. Bound Tech Show. Just sit right there, cause the castle's just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 1082 of the LinuxLink Tech Show. On the show tonight, we have Joel.
Good evening.
We have Joe.
Yep, I'm here.
We have Dave.
Howdy.
And what around the holidays, particularly Christmas, and I think also Thanksgiving holiday season, our company, and I don't think there's any other times, but we kind of go into what's called a code freeze. Does anybody else do that?
Yes, absolutely.
It makes
sense.
You're
in code freeze.
And so what do you consider is a code freeze?
No changes go in unless there's a break. If there's something that's actually broken, then you have to have an incident, and then you can have an emergency release. But that's the only releases that happen.
So you're talking about releases, but not necessarily code changes.
No, that includes code all code changes, anything in production should go through a release. Now,
right.
We did make exceptions this year for config changes, but next year we will not.
Now, see, here's,
I'd agree with that. Yep.
So here's the thing that has happened, right? We have our process is, and I believe I've spoken this in the past, but our process is we have a repository. For each one of our applications is a GitHub repository. When somebody is working on a feature, it's a feature branch that when it's ready, it gets merged into the main branch, and then a release is created off of that feature, right? And then the next person that comes in with a feature is the same thing. So each feature, even if it's like a bug fix or whatever, right? It's a new version, and then it could be released to production. So what ends up happening is that now, typically, when something gets merged in and a release is created, it's then tested in development and staging, and then within like a day or two, it's slated to go to production. And so there isn't a gap in time from when the release, too great a gap of time from when the release is created to when it actually makes its way into production. It should be within a day or two. But when they do a code freeze, what ends up happening is it's not a code freeze. It is a release freeze more so, because what they're actually doing is they're still doing the features. So somebody pushes something to production, code freeze happens, they're still developing, so you got one feature, two feature, three feature. So by the time code freeze is over, you can have like three or four or even more features ready to go to production, so the versions of the application going to production. And then that comes to bite us in the ass, right? Because if they find a bug in what went to production, now we have a problem, because our whole system is based on rapid deployment from release to deployment, right, to production, of being like a day or two at the most. So to get that bug fixed, we didn't have a patch system in place for that. So typically they would just have to this hasn't been a problem up until Code Freeze, right? It hasn't been a problem up until Code Freeze. So now they're like, well, we want a hot fix process to put in place. And it's not really hard to put a hot fix process in place, right? But it complicates our CI pipeline if we have to try and do it in an automated way like our regular pipeline. And what I found out, it becomes extremely challenging in the GitHub workflow because now the way that our whole thing has been built is that when feature branch is merged in, that commit right there creates a tag, right? That tag is the version number of the release, because the version gets automatically bumped when you do the merge. So you don't, that's all handled automatically. So that gets bumped, and then the release is created, and then it's a tag for that release, right? In GitHub. And then the next one comes in on the main branch. So it's all operating off the main branch. So I was trying to find a way to possibly automate, make this more automated. And what I kept bucking up against is that GitHub workflow doesn't really handle tags very well. I would try to isolate just a tag and trigger a workflow off of a tag, but then it would end up triggering certain workflows outside of that tag on branches and stuff outside of that tag workflow. So it was almost impossible. I couldn't figure out how to not have the workflow trigger on other branches when it wasn't supposed to. So in consulting with one of my other coworkers, it was like, well, why don't we just have it as like a kind of manual process that you trigger the workflow? So it's kind of like, if you need to do a hotfix of version 100, and there's also release version 101, 102, 103, and so you can't do 104 in the hotfix, you need to do 101.1. So you check out the tag 100, that commit, you build a you create a branch off of that, a patch branch off of that. From that patch branch, you create a feature branch, which is the hotfix where you fix the bug, the problem, you merge that in. So that goes through our standard testing process. Like, that triggers fine. Once that's merged in, it doesn't do anything. Then we have a manual workflow job that you trigger by passing it the hotfix branch name. That creates the release, creates the tag, and creates the container, which gets pushed up, and then it's deployed to our development and staging environments for testing, and then it can be pushed to production as it normally would, but it also in the process deletes that patch branch. So if you get it pushed to production and there's still a problem that you need to do another one, you just check out that new patch tag and repeat the process over again, right? And then we end up with a problem, the reverse problem here, whereas prior to this, the problem was we can't push the hot fix because it's blocked by all these other things that haven't been approved or tested for production yet. And we can't push them to production because we're in a code freeze, right? Particularly in a code freeze. So now you have the reverse problem. Once you get that patch version in there, you have to roll that patch into the main branch. But then that blocks any releases from that patched version up into the new version that gets generated from the main branch off of the, rolling that into the patch. So if it was like 100, 101, 102, 103, 104, you patched 100. That means 105 now is the version that has your patch in it, but it also includes all the work from 101, 102, 103, 104. And so you can't deploy 101, 102, or 103 versions to production until all of them have been attested and approved, and they all have to go at the same time. Otherwise, you have to then roll that patch into each one of those versions, 101.1, 102.1, 103.1, 104.1, then you can do it. So it becomes like the reverse pain in the ass problem there. And that's And it seems to be like this want is largely around the two times a year that we have code freezes, which you say, well, if you truly want to do a code freeze, maybe we shouldn't be merging feature branches and stuff like that in. Maybe we should be freezing it and calling it a code freeze as opposed to a release freeze is what it comes down to. So we're going to have that discussion tomorrow. I mean, the workflow is there. It's available. It's a challenge. I don't know how to solve that problem. It doesn't seem like it's easily solved through a technical mean management. It's more of a process management. Anyway, that's what I've been working on. That plus these damn deletions that I handed out a ton of deletions for everybody to help me out doing. And now I'm getting a ton of them back that people haven't been able to get to because it interrupts their workflow and their workday to do it. So now I'm stuck having to interrupt my workflow for the next couple of months again to continue these deletions. Man, it just dogs the system. Right, Dave?
Yep.
All right. Who wants to go next? There's a lot of stuff. Who's hot? Who's hot to go? HOTTOGO. You go, Joe. HOTTOGO. You can get me hot to go.
I've been playing around with Portainer and Docker Compose.
Okay.
Me too.
You too?
Yeah.
Crazy. I think I mentioned it last time too. But today I decided that I wanted to try out, you know, like a full desktop install in Docker. So
wait, what's Portainer do?
Portainer basically acts as a controller for all of your Docker instances.
So is that like Kubernetes?
Yes, I would say so.
So it's like Kubernetes or Lima or
yeah. Anything that acts as like, you know, a dashboard for all of your images is kind of similar.
Does it handle all the networking and stuff too?
It does. It does handle all the networking. All
right, that's cool.
You can use either Docker Compose or Docker Commands with it.
Okay.
Although I found it easier than trying to directly put the Docker commands into it. I found it easier to go down to the command line and put the Docker commands in there and then let Portainer pick that up.
Okay.
And then I actually did that, and then that allowed me to see the mistakes that I had made in setting it up and then go back and fix them manually inside of Portainer.
Okay.
Yeah, I installed the agent Docker Compose on each machine that I was running it on.
Yeah.
The way I did it, yeah.
Yeah. But, so I had done this in the past, and you know, I've been running, I tried running Pi-hole. I can get into that if you want. But I also tried Orca Slicer and Cura. Cura did not work on my machine specifically because of the graphics card that I'm using. But Orca Slicer works great.
I know what Cura is. Never mind. The way you said it, I didn't know what it was. Got it now.
FreeCAD I have installed. I haven't learned it yet. It seems to work just fine, and it uses Chasm VPN. I think that's the name of it. Yeah, Chasm VNC. It uses Chasm VNC, and that's where I got the idea to install like Ubuntu into a container. And obviously, I'm not the first person to have that idea. So I went out to Chasm Web and picked up theirs and installed that locally. That took some jumping through some hoops to actually get it to work right. And then I guess the password variable that you can set doesn't work right, so it defaults to a different password. But I was able to pick that up through the environment variables that I could read in Portainer, so I'm able to log into it. But it's designed so that you can't install anything into it. Now, I understand that with a Docker image that when you reload it, anything that you had added would be gone. But if I can, you know, set some volumes, have the home somewhere, and then have a script that reinstalls it whenever I reload it, stored in another location, then, you know, it'll work exactly the way I want to every time. But I guess Chasm Web is not the way to go with that, although Chasm VNC will be the tool that I end up using. I just have to find the correct image or build the correct image to do the things that I want.
So, right.
Have you tried Watchtower yet?
I have not tried Watchtower yet. You'll have to tell me about Watchtower.
Watchtower is pretty awesome. It's I don't know exactly how it works. It's a container that I don't know if it doesn't have a repo or something, but when it updates itself, what it's doing is it's updating every image on every Docker container you have on that machine. So once every 24 hours, it will look at all the Docker containers you have, and if there's an update, it will stop that container, get the new version, and clean up after itself and restart it. And it works flawlessly.
That's kind of cool.
Yep.
No, I've but used just Fortainer. Like looking at the Chasm Web desktop, I mean, it's got OBS Studio installed. It's got Nextcloud installed. I'm not sure how all that would work in a Docker image, though. And I would still have to set up the various volumes so that stuff was available outside of it. But it's really, really cool, I think, to have a full operating system that is available in a web browser. Maybe I'm just a nerd. Or, nope. You know, an 8-year-old that's tickled pink by weird crap.
I think it's
a little bit of both.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's what I got in regards to that. I can talk about the 3D printer stuff after we get through all the actual Linux stuff, this being a Linux show and all.
No, that was Linux related.
Yeah, exactly. I went through the Linux stuff, and now I'll go through the 3D printing stuff later on in the show when we're done with the Linux stuff. Because I know Joel and you both have stuff that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, look at Watchtower. It's pretty cool.
I will check out Watchtower.
Yeah.
Yep.
Fortainer's neat, too. You mentioned Pi-hole. Were you trying to run it in a container?
Yes, and it actually will run, but because I also run virtual machines on this same server, the port that Pi-hole that DNS uses is already in use by that, and you can remap the port, but then nothing will actually look for the DNS server at that location because everything only looks for things on 53, I think.
I can't remember.
But yeah, but because because there's already a DNS set or for my VMs, they're already using that port. So what I'm going to end up doing is getting another mini PC. I think Moss is either going to send me one or I'm going to pick one up off of eBay. And I'm going to put it into the 10-inch rack that I'm still building, which is coming along very well. It's almost done. I love how it's coming out. I'll set that there and then I'll do a fresh install. I won't have any VMs on there other than anything that is through Portainer, but I will have Pi-hole on it, and that will be my new Pi-hole.
Yeah. Have you used the Pi-hole script, install script?
I used the Docker image.
Okay. I just did the install script. I'm running it on a Raspberry Pi 3, and that's the only thing running on it, but I ran it with the install script, and it was... It updates easy, too. So
previously, I was running it on a 0W.
Right.
But that 0W died.
Yeah.
And so I'm not using a Pi-hole right this second. I'm just using AdBlock DNS. And that works well enough, but I still want, my own DNS.
Yeah.
So that way I can block certain sites from the kids.
Right.
Or control how much Manwa my son can read.
Yeah, I've been using Portainer for a while on my Pi. I'm using it to run my MB out of a container.
And I did set up Jellyfin.
How you like it?
Jellyfin.
I haven't mapped all the drives to it yet because I'm hoping that if and when I get my bonus this year, I can buy some new hard drives so everything's not on all of these other hard drives that split up amongst them because my 12 terabyte hard drive was dying. So hopefully I can pick up a couple of 12s or a couple of 14s and put those. I've actually been looking because I'm thinking about moving everything into that 10-inch rack that I'm building. All the hard drives that I currently have in my DAS, my direct attached storage. But the only problem with that is the power supply. So I was looking for some way to externally power 4 SATA hard drives. And I do see that there are some 12-volt options out there with proper 12-volt splitters that will split out the power for SATA with the 5-volt and the 3.3-volt, but I'm not sure how well those external power bricks would work on it, so I'm a little leery about doing it. But I could pull the power supply that's in the tower and try and squeeze that in there, but I think that's going to be a bit much to try and get in.
Yep.
Yeah, I like Jellyfin. I've not turned Plex off yet, but Jellyfin is a good replacement for it. I mean, and the big advantage, of course, is it's completely open source. But
yeah, and it doesn't reach out to the Plex mothership before
the
doing
Plex
anything.
Mothership.
Well, what would you call it? The Plex servers? Because it's automatic.
Yeah.
Anything you do on Plex is automatically attached to Plex.tv.
Yeah. Phoning home is what it's doing.
Yeah.
I got 2 new hard drives today, but not for my Plex server, for my, I guess it's my web server, but it's a Dell PowerEdge R710, but I got the hot swappable SAS drives. I got them for $42 a piece, 1 terabyte. So I hadn't installed them yet, but I thought that was a pretty good deal.
What size were they?
Pretty good,
1 terabyte.
Oh, not bad. Okay.
I need to get some bigger hard drives myself at some point to consolidate some of my storage.
Well, I had something else I was going to talk about that Joe reminded me of. I forgot what it was, but the one thing that I do have is, it's very short. It's called MOV-CLI. I guess that's short for movie command line. And it's you can go to github.com/MOV-CLI. But it's a command line tool with plugin support that allows you, using Fuzzy Finder, to, and there's bash scripts that'll do this, but this is pretty cool. It's in Python, but you more or less run the command move-CLI with the E argument and then the name of the plugin. Well, the name of the plugin, and then you just start typing. And there's a plugin for Jellyfin and Plex, so you can, and YouTube, and for files. But anyway, from the command line, from your terminal, you can type in, to start typing in the name of a movie on your Plex server or your Jellyfin server. And using Fuzzy Finder, it uses a Python scraper program to look at the metadata on your server. And you get to just, as you type, drill down to what you want to see. And it plays it from with MPV from your terminal. Which I just thought was sort of cool.
Yeah.
I don't know how often I use it, but it's sort of cool.
Sort of cool.
Yeah, if you want to watch Plex without using a mouse or a remote control, it's cool. the other thing that's not completely Lynch related, I've been struggling getting Skyrim Special Edition, I guess is what it's called, on Steam to work.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it works from my Steam server in here. This was headless, but now I've got a monitor attached to it. It will work here, but this machine has an NVIDIA card, but it doesn't have a sound card, so I was using it, you know, to stream it to my laptop, and it would just barf it to Bethesda screen, and it would do the same thing on NVIDIA Shield. it would just lock up. And I've tried ever tried moonlight, uh-oh, I've tried their, sunshine
with their anti cheat thing.
I don't know, but it would play on this on this Dell PowerEdge I got in here. It would play on this in here with no sound, but I couldn't stream it. And the only solution I found was with a free account on GeForce. Was it called GeForce Now or something? Where you're playing it on a server. I mean, on a remote machine, and it streams it from there, and it plays flawlessly. But I was happy about that.
Have you tried something like? What are you using to stream?
Well, I was. My NVIDIA Shield and or my...
No. What application are you...
I've tried using Sunshine to stream to Moonlight. I've tried the Steam Link. Get what it's called. It's called Steam Link, I think, on NVIDIA Shield. Yeah. And that's only two ways I've tried it. But well, every Proton version that they have, and I could never get it to get past that Bethesda screen. But now it is. So I played a couple of hours on my big screen TV from my recliner. It worked great.
I would have suggested Sunshine and Moonlight.
Yeah. Now when I got to playing around with that, I'm able to, of course, without a joystick, I'm able to stream my Minecraft Java's to my TV using Sunshine and Moonlight to my NVIDIA Shield. And that's nice, but I can't get the sound. But, you know, I've got a portable Bluetooth speaker that I can, you know, put near the TV, and that works. But
cool.
But I think Sunshine is more or less the open source, backwards engineered Steam Link thing.
See, they don't want to let you have the freedom to use your game the way you want to use it. That's probably what it is.
Yep. But that was the only game that was causing me problems. I could play Tomb Raider. I could do all the other games I have in Steam. I could stream to my TV.
Probably my laptop an just fine.
Yeah. I just can't figure it out.
That's likely what it is. It's my thinking, yeah.
But it works good.
What's the game called?
Skyrim.
Oh, Skyrim.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
I was saying something else.
Because Steel, it's only been out for what, 15 years now?
Yeah.
15,000 years.
But, people are still putting out new content for that. It is so much bigger than it was 15 years ago.
Oh, I still play Baldur's Gate and Neverwinter Nights occasionally. I mean,
those are still fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I made sure to go and get Arcanum. I don't know if you guys know that game. But it is, I think it's a seriously fun game. I mean, the graphics are old as hell now, and it's a little bit janky playing it, but I still think it's an extremely fun game. And if you haven't played it, you should play it.
I'll get that one. Now, I did finally get RetroPie put on my Raspberry Pi 5, which is, I'm running four or five Docker containers on there as well. I'm running a Comicbook server, a Calibri web server, Portainer, an actual budget server.
Yeah, I've seen some reviews of people running things on the 5, and I'm extremely impressed with just like compared to like the 4 and before with the way that it will stream video, and you can actually watch things like YouTube on it.
I've not tried that yet because I was thinking about using Sunshine and Moonlight on the Pi, but I got the NVIDIA Shield, which is just much more powerful, so I installed Moonlight on it. But I installed RetroPie on the Raspberry Pi 5. I got all these ROMs working, and I'm really happy with it. But I went ahead and installed it on the NVIDIA Shield, too, and the performance is better on the NVIDIA Shield, of course. But they both perform as they should.
Right. And let's say RetroPie is kind of a Pi 5 is kind of overkill. You can run a RetroPie all the way back to the 3 and have no problem. Yeah.
But at the same time, you know,
he's running all those other containers and crap. That's true, awesome. Right?
Yeah, it is. And you know, the 16 gig Raspberry Pi 5 came out the day after I got my Raspberry Pi 5 8 gig.
Yeah, and you can run RetroPie relatively well, even on the Pi 0. So
yeah, I ran it fine on a Raspberry Pi 3 for years, but but it runs really good on the NVIDIA Shield as well, which is even more overkill.
And speaking of the Pi 5.
I played Diablo on there, and it was great.
Yep. But speaking of the Pi 5, one of the things that have been annoying me, and I've been using mine as kind of my side desktop next to my work machine, more than my Surface that's also sitting next to me. One of the things that kind of annoyed the hell out of me was that Chromium, which is, you know, I prefer Chrome, but of course you can't get Chrome to run on ARM 64. Google doesn't build packages for it. So Chromium is the next best thing to use, but with recent developments with Chromium, they basically you can't sync. Yeah, out of the box you can't sync your Google account. So every single time you go into like a different Google application, be it YouTube, Gmail, whatever, you either have to log in or it doesn't sync, like, for example, your bookmarks and shit like that. So I kind of was exploring a way to do that and found pi-apps.io. And, well, what is Pi Apps? And it's basically a well-maintained collection of app installation scripts that you can run with one click. So you go through the installation that PyApps.io walks you through, and then you kind of get a little graphical widget. You know, you basically just open that up, and you can install all sorts of apps, including like a Prusa Slicer and other things. But the one that's interesting to me is Better Chromium. And when you install it, it gives you some options to check. And once you check those options, it'll install it. And then you get Chromium that can finally sync with your Chrome again. So very, very useful. And I was able to go all around my different Google accounts with no problems. And it installs all my plugins, all that jazz. So I like it. But that's not the only thing that's on there.
Yeah, I installed it after you sent that email out, and
right, it's pretty awesome.
Two questions. One is, how is your desktop experience been with the Raspberry Pi 5?
Pretty good. I mean, I've done any, like, I had a friend of mine, his daughter selling a Girl Scout cookie, so I just fired that up and ordered Girl Scout cookies from it. You know, not that that's a challenge, because it's not. you know, but. You know, it's just one of the things. So basically, that's just one of the things I do is buy shit, you know. So, I mean, I've used it for buying stuff on Amazon. I've watched YouTube videos on it. Although I don't watch too many YouTube videos on it because I usually have, like, my iPad or a phone next to me for that. So, but.
I've got mine hooked up to the TV, and I'm running X Windows with the Start X command, and I'm running on the Pi. And I've just played around with it. I mean, I'm not using it as a desktop, but I have used it as a desktop, you know, from the TV, from the couch, and it works fine. I mean,
I'm using Raspberry Pi OS. I switched to that away from Ubuntu. There were some little weird things with Ubuntu. Yeah. I think one of the next things I install from Pi Apps is probably going to be X Window Screen, you know, X Screen Servers, and then see if I can't run a screensaver like all the time on it, because one kind of annoying thing with the LCD I'm using with it, I'm using one of them portable LCDs that run off of USB-C for power, but I'm using, like, I think I use like a mini HDMI or mini or micro HDMI cable or something to hook it up to the Pi, but after it times out, the only way I can get the screen back is if I unplug and replug the power supply on the screen. That's it. I mean, it's really kind of annoying. So I'm trying to see if I just run a screensaver all the time, if it'll just let me do that.
Now, you know, I mean, some of these, is X screensaver in that Pi Apps menu?
I think so. There's Windows screen servers, yeah.
Because it's in the, you know, that I just install most everything from the repos. I mean,
Might be in the repos.
It is. I just checked. Yeah.
Let me ask you a question about the screen and see if this would help.
Yeah.
It's plugged into a power supply, right?
Correct.
So USB-C cable to a power supply.
Yep.
Why not get a USB-C cable with a power switch in the middle?
Well, I mean, you could do that. I mean, I probably even already have one, too, is my guess. But
yeah, because they make them for the Raspberry Pi, so.
Right. So, and it's, you know, it's not, okay, it's not like I got it plugged in via the USB-C cable to the Pi, and I'm using that for display. I've got separate cables for each. So, but, you know, and it's just with the screen I have. It's actually, the screen was actually a gift from our good friend Link. He sent it to me from Amazon. So,
I think the switch in the middle would solve most of your problems and right. still or allow real monitor. It to power down.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I don't care if it stays on all the time. It's not like it's going to use a ton of power, you know.
True.
But, you know, so.
But it might get, you know, screen burn.
I don't care. It's cheap screen. Yeah. But it wouldn't get screen burn unless it was showing the same damn thing all the time. That's the idea of screen savers.
So. Right. Okay.
So, if I run like a matrix screen server, I used to run, in fact, I have a. My Pi 4 is in the official, it's in a case that uses the official 7-inch screen. And I haven't used it in a while. That's just too small. I think this screen I'm using is a full 1080p. The other screen is, I think, like 720p. The official one's not very high resolution.
There's two really cool X screensaver modules. Three? One of them is called LED Scrubber, which is evidently, you know,
right.
supposed is actually useful in saving your screen, preventing screen.
Right. Running. Yeah.
But
yeah.
The other two are actually working terminals. One of them is called Apple II. It's an Apple II emulator, but it runs a terminal. And right. the other one is LED something. But both of them are terminal apps. I mean, you could run. There's standalone versions that emulate terminals, but in the X screensaver module, you can have it read a script. And I use it. I use the Apple IIe, the Apple II X screensaver module, and okay. it pulls a text-based weather forecast, and it constantly one line at a time reads.
No, that's kind of cool.
Prints out the weather. Yeah, and that's just one thing you can do with it. You could have it. You know, I think out of the box it uses Fortune. So you could, you know,
okay.
But you can put in your own script, which is what I did, and it just reads the current weather on the screen as it's
okay, that's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool.
So just going through Pi apps, though, some of the ones that you have installed, a lot of these are in the repos. Like, for example, GIMP is in the repos, you know, but it's listed in Pi apps. Bamboo Studio may not be, though. Bamboo Studio is what you use to run the Bamboo printers. It's got Cura and EagleCAD. In fact, I should install Cura on there, too. Not that I don't ever slice anything from it. I mean, I could, you know, but... and it's been a while since I fired up the 3D printer lately. I think one of the things I need
Portainer.
Right, right. I think one of the things I need to look into is you know, I have that Cricut machine, right? So far, the only thing I've ever used it with is Windows. I'd like to see if there's a way to get it working with Linux. I think there might be, because I was talking about it with Mordancy at OLF this year a little bit, because I love making T-shirts with it. It's fun to do that with. T-shirts is my prime thing. Although I've made like stickers and stuff for my car and stuff.
You got a Cricut machine?
Yeah, I do.
My mom does too.
I love that thing, man. I have my drawer, my t-shirt drawer is like overflowing, dude. In fact, I've got one blank t-shirt sitting right next to me, and I just haven't figured out what I want to put on it yet.
Now, my mom has griped about the built-in obsolescence. These things. There's like one part that tends to break
yeah.
most often. I, I was barely listening, so I couldn't tell you.
The blade, maybe? Probably.
I don't know.
Yeah, the blades are replaceable, so that's not, I mean, the only problem is if you have an older one. Now, mine's the latest, greatest one. It's not, they have a really big one that I'd love to get, but, you know, and a lot of people ask me, well, would you consider selling t-shirts? It's like, not really, because it's just too much. When you're cutting the vinyl, which is primarily what I do, is cut vinyl, there's a lot to it. Because once you cut it, you got to peel away all the pieces that you don't want on the shirt, and there's usually quite a bit of it. You know, so like for example, you also have to cut it mirror, because I'm using the smart iron-on material usually, which means you don't have to do they have a backing built into the material on that, so basically you don't have to have a mat and use that for cutting it. So I do have some stuff that you need to put on a mat before you work with it, but I don't use it very much. I use mostly the smart materials that they have. I haven't tried cutting, like, you can cut paper and stuff, like, and even leather with it if you wanted to. I haven't tried that yet, but yeah, I use it to make all sorts of little things. So, but yeah, the PIAPS is pretty damn cool. I like the fact that I finally can have my Chrome working as I think it should.
That's the other question I was going to ask you. What are you syncing? I mean, what this sync thing?
Just from Google. Google. You know how with Chrome, you can sync your bookmarks across Chrome sessions.
Yeah. So it's mainly bookmarks.
So machine bookmarks. Yeah, bookmarks and plugins.
Okay. Because I left Chrome and Chromium a long time ago. Firefox has a Firefox sync that does every bit.
True, and Firefox is available on the Pi, so I mean that's not a problem. Yeah.
It may. I don't know if it runs any better or not. I've been using the Qt browser now for over a month, and I love it.
I use Chrome a lot, mostly because it's pretty much what I have to use for work, especially when we're working with Datadog.
I can understand that.
Yeah, Datadog is our monitoring tool, and you can write monitors and stuff outside of it, but probably the thing I use the most with Datadog is synthetic testing. So synthetic testing, what that is you literally will, in your browser, record something. You know, for example, mine would record logging into a client's machine, doing something, and then logging out. And then that's how we can tell if the application is up or down, right? And if the synthetic test fails a certain amount of times, it sends a page to whoever our on-call is, okay? Well, kind of one of the annoying things with it is that the recording function of Datadog only works in Chrome. I've tried to – it won't work in Firefox. So the other thing, too, is like, for example, I have – like exactly one client that uses Google IDP. All right. I got to remember when I'm doing manual testing for that particular client by firing up the URL in my browser that I need to open that up in the incognito window. Otherwise, it picks my Google account up right off the bat. And of course, that account won't sign into that application. So I have to do something else with that one, and that's the only one. The Microsoft's IDP kind of plays with multiple logins much easier. Like, it'll give me, like, if I'm signed into multiple clients' machines, it'll give me, hey, which account you want to use. That's what Azure does, Microsoft's Azure IDP. But the Google one doesn't do that. It just automatically picks up with you in Google. Not to mention the fact, what I found with Google IDP, Dan, do you use Google IDP at work for sample authentication?
No.
Okay.
We use Okta.
Okay, that's right. Yeah, I remember you talking about that. Yeah.
I got the news that they're going to be switching over to, what is it, Microsoft's Edge soon?
Azure and Edge. Yeah, well, Edge is Pro.
Well, no, they're not switching to Azure. They're just using the Edge.
For browser?
No. Isn't it?
Browser is Edge.
No, wait.
I mean, Azure IDP or Entra, maybe?
Entra, that's it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Entra. Yeah, Entra ID, which is
Entra
Azure.
This motherfucker.
Yeah. Quite honestly, it's the better of the two, to be honest. It's just been my experience when working with it with multiple clients. But Datadog only works in Chrome, so I'm a Chrome guy. You know, I even have Chrome on my iPad and on my iPhone and on my Android phone. Well, Android phone, that's a given, but
I use Firefox on my phone.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, I've had it on there. Yeah, you know, I use, like, on my MacBook. I have. Oh, and I finally got to go to Sequoia too, Dan. And I got to play with the Image Playground on the Mac, which is pretty cool. It's basically Apple Intelligence or Apple's AI.
Uh-huh.
And you can, like, feed it, like, I fed it a picture of myself and said hiker, and it generated and went animated style, so it generated a animated image of what I would look like as a cartoon with a backpack on. It actually looks pretty cool. It actually nails it pretty good. But I haven't played around with it beyond that. I saw it in there. I saw it pop up when I logged in first on Monday. I'm like, oh, that's cool. Let me play around with it. Now that's my Slack and my Zoom avatar now. There's other things you can do with that. I haven't played around too much with Apple Intelligence because Apple, as Apple is, much of Apple Intelligence doesn't work on my iPhone, which is because it's an iPhone 13 and not a 15 or a 16. So it does on my Mac, and it does work on my iPad since my iPad is a M2 iPad. So, but that's Apple crap.
Speaking of crap.
Yeah,
I was looking for. I've got a wireless keyboard and mouse. I've got a couple, but I didn't want to use like this full size keyboard. I didn't want to use a keyboard and a mouse to game like on the TV, like Minecraft.
Right.
Anyway, so I ordered the, you know, my mistake. The most popular wireless keyboard with a trackpad. It's a Logitech K400. Don't get it. I mean, it works fine.
I have one.
The function keys, you can't use them unless you download some Windows app that reconfigures it. It's a Logitech app.
I've not had a problem with them.
I haven't had a problem with my K400 either.
Really?
Yep.
Really?
I cannot use the function keys under i3.
It's a terrible keyboard. Don't get me wrong.
It is.
Yeah, it's not the greatest keyboard.
No, it's not. I cannot get the function keys to work. Because I've got
works fine for me.
I've got shortcut keys like Meta Function or Meta F2.
It's great because it has a touchpad built in, and so you only have to worry about one device.
Yeah,
correct.
But the keys are terrible.
And
my biggest gripe though is I can't get the function keys to work. Is there a trick? I mean, is this the function? You just press the function button and hold it down while you hit the F2, right? Doesn't work for
me. There is a setting that you need to check. Your system might be seeing it as a Mac keyboard.
Yep. I just solved it myself. I mean, I'm stupid. There's the XKBD. I can't remember the command. There's a command.
Yeah, I'd have to look it up again myself.
And I just have to do that. It's not a standard keyboard, so it's probably mapped to something else.
It probably thinks it's a Mac keyboard, which doesn't have the function keys.
Oh,
command key. Yeah.
Oh, Here's the I just was reading the entry in PyApps on Better Chromium. Guess what'll work on it? And I haven't tried it yet, but guess what'll work?
Chromecast.
Netflix.
Really?
It's got Vivine DRM support. In Better Chromium. I'll have to try it. Not that I have anything that I need to watch on Netflix right now.
Wait a minute.
Watch Rebel Ridge.
I'm trying to think.
Yeah, Wednesday's good. Rebel Ridge was a really good movie.
Cobra Kai, last bit of it should be soon, I think.
And then the movie.
Is there a Cobra Kai movie coming?
No, not a Cobra Kai movie. A Karate Kid movie.
Yeah. I know. I did start.
Have Jackie Chan in it.
Okay. I did start watching Tim Allen's new show, Shifting Gears. It just came out. The first episode was last week, and then the second one was today. And they also stream it on Hulu. I like it so far. It's pretty good. But you gotta like Tim Allen.
He's probably playing the exact same character again, though. He's done that in like at least two other TV shows.
Yeah, it's definitely different than.
He's still playing Tim the Toolman Taylor after all these years.
Well, no. Last Man Standing, he was. Outdoor Man. He was the social media guy for Outdoor Man.
He was the manly man that worked at store and was somewhat in charge. And
yes.
Yeah, he was playing Tim the Toolman Taylor, except an outdoorsy instead of on screensy.
This one, Tim Allen's got, was exceptional when he was playing Santa Claus. He's got some of the same problems that Adam Sandler has and that he's playing himself mostly. And even Santa Claus, he kind of played himself a little bit. This one he's a car guy, that's just Tim Allen, period. So yeah, playing himself. And his daughter moves back home. So and it's all the difficulties with that. So but oh, they got Brave on that better on PyApps too. If you like the Brave browser,
and the daughter is the girl from Two Broke Girls,
Kat Dennings.
Right?
Kat Dennings, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty. It could be. It could have been really bad, but I was pleasantly surprised. So, I guess a new Captain America is coming out soon too, isn't it?
Yeah, I saw the trailer.
A couple months or weeks. Wait, is it March?
Weeks.
Brave New World?
Oh, March. Yeah, Brave New World. I've seen trailers of it. I am not that impressed.
Supposed to have Red Hawk in it.
Oh, crap. February 14th. Valentine's Day.
It's next month. There you go.
I'm looking forward to it.
There's your date, man. Go see new Captain America movie, and unfortunately, you know what they do for Valentine's Day around here? You take your date to White Castle. I am not kidding.
I would take my wife to White Castle. I love fucking White Castle. I'd take Dave to the movie too, but he always wants to do a tug of war. And I don't have that.
The White Castle literally does a special Valentine's Day thing where they literally have table service.
I would do that. I like White Castle.
Table
man.
Dancing service?
No, like they have tablecloths and all this stuff. Bring your date to White Castle.
Is anybody seen a sack of whiteys?
Everybody seen Craven yet?
No.
I heard it was garbage.
I haven't seen any of it.
It doesn't get good reviews, but it looked good to me. I mean, the trailer did.
It's no Superman trailer, man. Come on.
Yes. Yes, you literally, Columbus area White Castle restaurants, you literally can make reservations for White Castle for Valentine's Day.
That's cool.
Did you cry when you saw the Superman trailer, Dave?
I did not.
Did you
see
it?
You know what?
I did.
It's awesome.
I watched it twice.
And you didn't cry, man? You didn't? When Krypto?
The original
Krypto
theme? Showed up?
No, I didn't.
And the original theme?
Yeah, that was the original theme. I didn't notice that.
From the Ilya
Sutkin. And Guy Gardner?
One. Yeah. With that bad haircut.
And Hawk Girl?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
I can't wait, man. I'm excited. I hope they don't blow it, man. I hope they don't blow it.
It looks promising because the last few Superman movies I have not been impressed with because they've taken Superman dark and Superman never really was that dark.
I like them all. I've not had a complaint with any Superman movie.
I still like the 80s ones. Always will. The best with what's his face in it? It was
Christopher Reeves. But
yes, thank you. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's because it was, you know, a part of your youth.
And classic.
I still remember Brandon Routh catching that airplane. I thought that was a cool movie in places.
Keep that up, Dave. You're going to catch these fists.
Yeah. Hey, at least I'm off Monday.
Me too.
Are you off Monday too? Dave's always off. I don't
Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King Day.
Are you watching the kids?
I'm watching the grandson on Monday. But I got next Friday off.
Watching the detectives?
I had Elvis Costello.
Watching Bluey.
Yeah, baby.
I have something to watch Monday night, too. Bluey. Bluey, the Australian Blues Clues, almost. Almost.
No,
I know
better.
It's different.
It's way better than Blues Clues.
Well, that ain't hard to do now. Because the second iteration of Blues Clues sucks. It's like Luke was into Bob the Builder. And I think they still make it, but if you've seen it, it certainly looks a lot different than it did when my son was a kid.
Well, my grandson is 18 months, 17 months old, something like that, and he really likes the YouTube videos of Jurassic World Evolution where they show all 102 dinosaurs. He likes that a lot.
Who would?
It's better than Cocomelon.
What the hell is that?
We don't watch that.
Oh, it's kind of like this generation's Teletubbies almost.
Nah, it's worse than that.
Well, I agree. Yeah.
You know what? Speaking of kids shows, right? So I went to this. My wife's school's D&D club last Thursday, and I met the party for the first time.
But these are middle school kids. Right?
These are middle school kids, okay. Mostly the sixth, seventh, and a few eighth graders. And
is this the one that ordered like $100 worth of food?
No, this is not. No, these are different kids. It's an after school gaming club, and they didn't have a dungeon master. So my wife offered my services, so I went in.
Volunteered you.
And so I was under the expectation that we were going to roll up characters the first time, but apparently they already rolled up characters. And so when I played D&D, I was a pretty serious D&D player, right? When I met these kids, right, it reminded me of the D&D cartoon. Right? I'm like, and these, you know, they're great kids, and we're going to have a good time, I'm sure. But, like, so the party, this is what the party consists of right now. Three rogues, two druids, a wizard, a barbarian, and a paladin, right? And the first thing I said to them was, where's the cleric? And they're like, we ain't playing no clerics. I'm like, then you ain't getting healed. And you're all going to die, right?
Right.
So I like three rogues, two druids. Like, It's just, and so I'm like, I said to the kid who's playing a wizard, I'm like,
middle school D&D stuff.
Yeah, I am. I said to the kid who's playing a wizard, I'm like,
you're getting wound up again.
What spells did you pick? And he's got, I got them all. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, what do you have? I got the metal spell. I got the fire spell. I got the. So he has no idea what he's doing, right? So he's like, I'm like, so how are you? Like, he's like, I got a magic wand. And I'm like, oh, so your magic wand just casts spells. And like, I'm like, he's like, yeah. And I'm like, okay, we're going to have fun with this. And I told him what's going to happen is every time you go to cast a spell with that wand, you're going to roll a die 20, and I'm going to have a secret list of what it's going to do. And I'm like thinking to myself, like, wait a minute, that's exactly like Presto was in the D&D cartoon. He would just throw shit out of his hat. Right? Like the D&D cartoon, I'm looking at, when I watch it, I'm like, oh, why can't this be like real D&D? And now I get it. Now I know why it wasn't like right. real D&D. Because you get a bunch of middle school kids together to play D&D, the target audience, and they come up with this wacky crap. This wacky
hey,
stuff.
Dan, I found the new MP3 player for you. I just put it in the Mumble chat. I might have to order that. It's only $35.
Is it the spiritual successor to the Sansa disc? Is that what it's called?
It could be. I don't know.
Oh, you know what? Speaking of that, I mentioned last week I had to, like, about getting pulled over.
Yeah.
Oh yeah yeah yeah.
So I went to the court date, and like I was sitting there, and like so I'm like. I was there for an hour and a half waiting. And so they're going through, like, they're calling up. And these people are calling up. They're, like, people driving without a license, driving without insurance and a license. And, like, the judge is, like, and some of them are, like, a little belligerent. And some of them are, like, and the judge is, like, okay, you know, I'm going to give you another month to get your license and insurance. Come back and show me, blah, 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 blah. He's, like, you know, and this one guy came up and he apparently had a DUI, right? 20 years ago. So he was driving without a suspended license, and the judge is like, you know, this is one of the highest traffic rates in the country, traffic fatality rates in the country. We have bad. We take these things seriously. And the guy's like, yeah, I know. I've been working through, and I've been going all around trying to get this situated and to give me a run around. So he gave him like 2 months to get it all situated, right? So then it comes my turn, and he's like, the officer was there, and he's like, you know, you were using your phone when you were driving, and so the officer said, I observed him using his, you know, using the phone while he was driving, and I said, can you clarify what you mean? Well, he's like, you were using your phone when I saw you at when you pulled up to the stop, you were using your phone. I'm like, I drive a manual. I can't use my phone while I'm driving. You know, I can't stick shift like that. And I said, look, I set my phone up to listen to a podcast. I'm fully aware using your phone how dangerous it is. Plus, it's illegal. And I saw the police officers there. I wasn't using my phone. It doesn't make sense that I would be using my phone because I'm driving manual. I can't pull out and shift and drive and use the phone at the same time. I wasn't using the phone, and I know I'm not supposed, you know, you're not supposed to do that. And so basically it came down to the judges like, well, it's your word against his, so I find you guilty. I'm like, what the hell?
That's bullshit.
Yeah, I'm like, I drive a freaking manual. And so he's like, well, I saw you pulling up. I saw you when you were pulling up to the stoplight.
Did you actually see my phone in my hand?
He said, I saw you pulling up to the stoplight using your phone. And I'm like, I was shifting down. I wasn't. And the judge is like, well, technically you could have shifted into neutral and then picked up your phone. And I'm like,
did you see it in my hand?
He said that. And that's what he said. I said, I saw you using your phone. And I'm like, and so I got to pay $125. Like,
well, it makes little sense because the burden of proof isn't on you.
Yeah. It's on him.
And the judge is playing choose your own adventure. I mean, but technically you could have put it in neutral. I mean, he's making crap up. Yeah. I mean,
but that's
you
the thing.
Been slicing
it's,
bread in there.
I mean, it's like what recourse do I have? I can appeal it, but at this stage, I'm already like wasted.
It would cost you more to get a freaking lawyer. And...
Yep.
Yeah. So I'm just gonna pay it. It's not. It sucks that I have to pay it, but it's like I wasn't using my phone. I know. Wait, I wasn't using my phone.
Answer this for me. Is it now more because you decided to go, or is it the same?
No, it's the same.
I'd have just paid it to begin with. Just because it's like, you know, it's bullshit. I agree. But what are you going to do?
Yeah, that's it. I can't do anything. I mean, right. I fought the law, and the law won, man. Just like the song said.
It's not like he caught you on camera with it, you know, which would be a little different story.
Uh-huh.
But, you know.
Now you need to watch Rebel Ridge.
Wow. What will that show me?
It'll show you what to do when you're unjustly accused by the law.
What do I do, Dave? You can tell me right now. Don't keep it a secret. Come on.
You need to watch him.
You shoot him.
Oh, yeah. That'll work out.
But looking at this,
Vigilante on his ass.
Looking at this MP3 player, I can
cool.
see. Yeah, I can see the appeal, especially since, you know, thinking about it, like right now, iPods are really coming back into style. The old school iPods are actually trending.
Isn't that weird?
Well, it's because people are trying to do that whole less connected thing and still be able to do things like listen to music, listen to podcasts, whatever.
See, these even have Bluetooth in them, man. These even have Bluetooth, which is pretty damn nifty. I'm so tempted to click. Buy now is what I'm tempted to do, but
I would still have my concerns about the interface and whether or not it would work well. And I'm looking at it; it says 128 gigabyte large capacity, and it's 64 gigabyte internal and a 64 gigabyte micro SD card.
It's
so
also
I'm assuming
negative.
It comes with the micro SD card.
It does, actually. It does.
Oh, what bothers
so can
me
you put
about
a larger one?
I assume you could.
What bothers me about it is if you look at the pictures, you scroll down, you see it in someone's hand. So you get an idea.
It looks
scale.
Small.
Yeah, but if you look at the pictures to the left of it, the top, and it's the 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 one down.
It actually looks thick as hell, actually.
Yeah.
And that sixth picture from the top and on the left at the top, where the guy's dancing with his daughter and his thing's laying on the floor. It looks like a thick tablet. I mean,
thick boy.
Yeah, that looks really huge in that picture, but I think it's just like imposed on there.
Think it is because they superimposed this sound wave.
If you scroll
looks
down.
Looks like a dictionary.
Yeah. If you scroll down to where the guy is holding it in his hand.
Yeah, it's
like,
much smaller. Yeah.
It's still pretty dang big for an MP3 player. If you're looking at that thing looks almost the size of a friggin' phone in his
almost,
hand.
Almost, right. And see, that's my thing, is I struggle to think. It's kind of cool, and I kind of want it, but then I think, why?
Now, it says it'll do FM radio, it'll do voice recording. You can read ebooks on that tiny screen if your eyes are that good.
Yeah, but can you put Rockbox on it?
2.4-inch screen. And
you
can put videos
on it. Yeah.
You can watch AMV or AVI format videos.
Yeah.
Why is it MP4 on there?
Would it play Speaks in AUG?
It does play AUG.
But it doesn't play Speaks.
Okay. Yeah, the video format is only AMV and AVI.
That's kind of dumb.
Yeah, and the ebook format, the only one it says it'll do is TXT, so you'd have to convert anything
text file.
To TXT.
Yeah.
As a text reader.
Yeah. And you know
but
what?
Man.
This looks like an AliExpress thing, because if you look down below, you see an OilSky 128 gigabyte MP3 player with Bluetooth 5.3, and it looks identical, and it's also $5 more.
Yeah. Well, here's one for $26.99. But no, just looking at that, I mean, it's got a 500 mAh battery, and that's freaking huge for the size of the device. That's a beast. Kind yeah, looking down at the similar items, I mean, there's one for $29.99 with a 64 gigabyte internal, and it's all screen instead of having that little thing at the bottom. And then $26.99, once again, all screen. It looks really plastic, though, and only 16 gigabyte.
I remember having an MP3 player back in the day that had a 2.5-inch hard drive inside of it that was replaceable.
Oh, the Zunes. Oh, my God, the Zunes were awesome.
I actually have a Zune. I got it when I was living in the apartment just because I thought, well, let me see how if it was actually bad. Actually, it's actually pretty good, actually.
I think I had one of those 40 gigabyte models or something.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Absolutely massive.
Yep. AGP Tech. Oh, that's a name from Blast from the Past. I didn't even know they were still around. I just searched for Sansa, and you can get refurb Sansa clips now for $37.
I can't remember what model it was. I want to say it's a Sansa E240. That was
yes,
the best MP3 player. I want to say that's
I had Best Buy may have their Best Buy has had their Insignia brand for a while. I had the Pilot, which I loved until I cracked the screen on it.
No, I had a bunch of the Sansas, and they were good.
Yeah,
like
I had
the original couple that came out, and then the later ones really sucked.
Yeah, the one that had the one to the touch, like cross display thing on it for the
whatever
touch control thing. Yeah, because the original one had a wheel on it, almost like a physical wheel, almost like an iPod.
I think it was a Sansa E260, something like that. It was. I loved that thing.
And then the iRivers.
Oh, the iRivers were okay.
Yeah, for a long time it was better to have a separate MP3 player and just load everything up onto it.
Yep.
Now I'm not so sure anymore.
Yeah, now I think it's better just to use my phone. And I understand the whole wanting to disconnect thing, but most days I'm not looking at my phone unless I'm actually on a call or something like that. Unless I are answering a text message, I'm not using it for browsing except for like small things here and there when I don't have another device handy.
Yeah,
so, see, I may drive 15 miles a month now that I'm retired, and I'm home six days a week, easy. And everything I do is from a terminal. But if I'm in the car, it's on my phone, But if I'm at home, I just do it from the command line.
Now, I do have a new. A new set of headphones now.
Which ones?
The Shox Open Run 2s.
Didn't you mention those last time?
I think so. I didn't know. I don't know if I had them then. Are
these bone conductive?
Yeah.
They are. Well, not strictly, actually, because they actually do have a speaker that fires pretty much directly in your ear. But you can't switch it to like a pure bone conducting mode. And I did try them in the same room as my family, and I said, "Do you hear what I'm listening to?" And they said no. So
that's cool, because that was one of my concerns.
Yep.
But you could hear them.
Oh yeah, I could hear that. Every single set they had. And my prime reason isn't for that, although that is handy.
I mean, if you're running, that's what you need.
If I'm outside running, or if I'm outside on trail, I absolutely want to hear what's going on around me.
Yeah.
The only time I want to block it out and I'm running is if I'm on the fucking treadmill.
Yeah.
At that point, I don't give a shit. I'm focused. but if I'm out and about, I want to hear if that car is about to hit me. I want to hear
if somebody's running up behind you to stab you.
Ray or something like that.
Oh, good. I thought I was the only one that paranoid.
Yeah. And they got. I have the regular ones. They make them in two sizes, regular and mini. The mini actually would fit me. I did try those ones on Best Buy. If you want to try them before you buy them, as in at least try them and see if they're comfortable to you. I don't think you might be able to try the sound quality on them too, but. So I tried the minis on after I had ordered them, And the mini actually fit me real close, and it was real close to the head, but it wasn't uncomfortable. These ones are a little looser around the head, but they don't fall off. So I've been walking around, like I went for a walk with them on. Actually, one day, is it this week or last week? One day, I think maybe it was this, maybe it was Monday. Yeah, Monday, I think, instead of going to the gym, I did, I woke up way late. Like, I woke up, like, I normally wake up at, like, between 5 and 5:30 in the morning. I didn't wake up till 6:50. So I'm like, shit, I ain't got time to get ready and go for the gym. So I went ahead, ate my breakfast and all that stuff, and then I just went out for a walk. Down to the end of the development in black. I did that four times. Wore these each time, and I could still hear what was going around me. I hear cars driving around me, and I could hear the music or the podcast just fine. I will say this: if you're an audiophile, not set headphones for you. Actually, most Bluetooth headphones aren't set headphones for you if you're an audiophile. But if you're just listen to podcasts, like what most of us do, podcasts or ebooks or whatnot, perfect. It worked great.
Speaking of podcasts and audiobooks, I was using a command line program, Castro. It was a TUI interface. I mentioned it a month or two ago, but it mainly for podcasts, but it was eating up like 8 gig of RAM. I mean, it was just crazy. So I found another one. It's called Term Music, TERMUSI.
Look. Hold on. Uh-huh. You already have audio bookshelf set up, right?
I know. I do, I take it back. It does do audiobooks, I think. Let me make sure. No, what I'm using it for, I'm sorry. What I'm using it for is podcast and playlist. So it I've got some audio that's not music, but it's also not audiobooks. They're sermons, but. So I've got two very large playlists of audio, and that's in one tab, and then I can tab over and do podcasts. But it's got a TUI interface, and it uses very little RAM, and it's pretty awesome. If you need something like that,
it's like it's called, what?
I recently started listening to other podcasts again, and I'm using Audio Bookshelf's podcast function, so you can like set up a whole area for it for just podcasts, and it will automatically download them and it will stream them to my phone. I wish that the interface was a little bit more robust.
Yeah,
interesting. I use a Podcast Addict, which I like real well. Probably my biggest complaint with it is I have Android Auto in the car, so I like to listen to podcasts when I drive, and I did that a lot. Like Christmas, we drove down first because I wanted to spend some extra time with my dad and my brother, and the whole time I'm driving 6 hours listening to podcasts. Okay, so one bug it has is say I'm either listening to something else before I get in the car with my headphones, or if either way, it doesn't really matter whether I'm listening to something or not. I could be listening to a podcast on Podcast Addict or not. I get in the car, and once it starts up, it does fire up Podcast Addict, but it will invariably start streaming something that could be as old as 2 years old. Not on the phone. Don't know why it's doing it. I reported the bug to Podcast Addict, and they're like, and they have no clue. I'm like, it should pick up right where I left off. So if I'm listening to, like, Living in the Retro Arcade, me talking about Coleco, which was this week's show, it should pick right up where I left off. But it doesn't. I don't know why it does that.
Well, this Term Music program, I put a link in the Mumble chat to get her page. If you want to look at it, I misspoke. It's not audiobooks. It's music and podcasts. But what I like about it, and what I the reason I was looking to replace Castro is because it used too much memory, is it will stream the podcast. It doesn't download, which is what I was looking for. And I know I could probably do that with Audio Bookshelf, but Audio Bookshelf would probably end up downloading them. But I wanted something.
I like them downloaded, but it's just because I download them when I'm on my Wi-Fi, then I can go out in the mountain and listen.
I was on the road more, I did too. But since I'm at home, I don't want to download all the podcasts. I'd just rather stream
them. I get it. Yep, I get it. Yep.
But this is really good at that.
No, I download them to my server, and then, you know, I haven't had any connection issues, and if I knew that I was going to, like when I went traveling, I made sure to download two or three books so that I knew that I had enough that if I was in an area without connection, I could listen locally.
One of these days, I should pay for the full pay version of MB so I can download like my own movies and stuff onto my iPad and whatnot.
You can get Jellyfin and do that.
Yeah. I have to look and see if there's a there's probably a Portainer for it.
Oh, there is. I think.
For Jellyfin? Yes, there is one for Jellyfin. I know this because I have it installed.
I think I installed it from the Debian repos is how I did it.
Yeah.
Not the Debian repos, but a Debian repo for it. Yeah.
Here's another one. This has to be an Android device, another cheap MP3 player. Let me get a better looking link. This one's a little more interesting because it looks like it runs apps on it. It looks like it's an Android device to me.
It looks like
only 60 bucks.
It looks like the old Samsung players.
Yeah, it does, don't it?
It's only looks 60 like a bucks. Samsung player.
60 bucks with 80 gigs of storage.
And you could probably turn it into a Wi-Fi phone if you wanted, since it does run Android.
Oh, right, Doug. Google Voice on it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, I mean, at that point, why not use your phone?
Right, exactly. But it supports MP3, Wave, FLAC, Ape. What's Ape? What is Ape? I've never heard of that one before.
It's 60 bucks. I would get this for a kid and turn it into a Wi-Fi phone.
AUG, M4A, AAC, WMA, and MP2, and etc. And Pandora, which who uses Pandora anymore? I have not used Pandora in years. Spotify, Tidal, Deezer, and Amazon Music. I use my music app of choice is YouTube Music because it's free with YouTube Premium.
Yeah, that's what I use.
Yep, it works great.
Mine is Revamped, which is free YouTube.
Yeah, and that's the one thing that I wish that you could do in Android Auto that you cannot do is just. I don't want to watch YouTube videos on my car's display. I want to listen to audio from a YouTube stream.
Right.
In my car, and I don't need video playing up front.
That's distracting.
Right. I just want a audio only interface to YouTube. Period. That's all I want. Because there's a lot of streams I listen to where it's just avatars flipping back and forth. I don't give a shit about the video. I just want to hear what they're talking about, you know. Or a good case might be like occasionally, like Jay's Two Cents will do a talking head video. I don't need to watch Jay saying it. I just want to listen to him say it. You know, it's like, can't I do that? Why can't I do that on Android Auto? It doesn't make sense. I mean, I can play it, all right, but I have to start it on my phone and then drive. You know. And I have done that before. It works great. So, but I just would love to be able to pause it from my car screen. That's it. It's like, I don't care about the video output. I don't want to see it. It doesn't matter. I will say this, though. During the playoff game that I was a little late getting home from or to watch at home for the Buckeyes, I did fire it up in the car and just laid my phone around the console and was listening to it. That worked good, too.
We gotta wrap this show up.
Yes, it's 10 o'clock.
Dave's gonna fall asleep.
Dave's a fucker. Dave is happy hour at the home.
Yeah. All right, here we go. I'm gonna play promos. We'll see you in a week.
I am short.
Oh my god. It's Hacker
Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
Were you making egg foo young in the kitchen? I was in the dining room having sushi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know it.
Why? Dave says it's tug of war time.
Tug of war. He's choking his chicken?
No. It's not a chicken.
Ah, we got a Freddy's now, and Freddy's is good. I like Freddy's.
Freddy's ain't bad.
No?
I don't notice any better than Culver's.
I like Culver's, man.
Yeah, Culver's is good. Okay. Freddy's is good, too.
Yep. Freddy's is the closest to me. Culver's is on the other side of town. Although, I might check out... I do belong to Planet Fitness. I may check out... we got LA Fitness over next to the Sam's Club I go to every week. I might check them out. I have some friends that might be able to get me in for a workout and check them out. Because the nice thing that they have that Planet Fitness don't have is they have a track. Like they have a 0.9-mile track inside the gym.
Oh wow!
And that'd be great for like cool downs and if I just want to run. Because sometimes I don't know about you, I find it harder sometimes to run on a treadmill than to just like run.
It's higher impact,
slower.
I mean, yeah, by definition, it's higher impact.
Yeah, you're running on steel.
Yep,
well,
yep.
It's well, also not, pushing back against your foot. I mean,
right.
Literally.
Well, that and I have a tendency to every once in a while I'm on the treadmill, I'll kick that the guard in the front. Just because that's just how my stride goes.
Teach it a lesson, right?
Yeah.
He was picking up his Uber Eats.
There.
Did you get it this time?
I sure did.
Oh, yeah.
Because I got a subject today. Woohoo.
Do you?
I do. Something technical, not health related.
That's cool.
Well,
have any of you guys tested out Pi KBM?
No.
Pi KBM?
Yeah, Pi KBM.
KVM, as in keyboard virtual machine.
Correct.
Yeah, I know what it is, but I've not tried it.
Oh, okay.
I have not yet either.
I haven't tried it either. It's just it seems interesting.
Sure. No, but I had some Quest peanut butter candies tonight.
What's that have to do with Pi KVM?
Nothing.
Oh. It was a piss poor segue.
Yes, it was. Which we're good at. Pi apps, man. That's what I'm talking about. Like, enable Chromium to actually sync your Google account for once on a Raspberry Pi.
You used to be able to do that really easy.
Well, you used to just work out of the box, but Google's being assholes, but, you know.
Well, Google's good at that.
Well, so is Apple too. So don't get me started on that.
But aren't they supposed to be selling off Chrome and Chromium?
Well, that's what the federal government wants them to do, but it's not going to happen.
Yeah, at least seems likely.
I don't think so. I tried my factory meals too. I can talk about that a little bit too, but that's actually interesting. And I think I can get free boxes for people too.
Boxes of what?
A factor meals.
Oh.
I'm pretty happy with them. They're actually pretty damn tasty.
Now I got something I can talk about, but it won't take long.
Good, because we don't want to hear it.
Good. Yeah, that's not true. We want to hear that. Well, actually, he doesn't do suppositories anymore because he's retired.
I never did them.
He's down here making them in his basement. He's like,
look, now he just doesn't get paid to do them. That's the only thing. Right. It hasn't stopped him.
Well, he's like, I'm going to take these nettles and I'm going to make the world's greatest suppository. Once it goes in, it won't come out.
Poison ivy and poison oak infused.
Just had an idea. You can 3D print reusable suppositories.
There you go.
Oh, God. Next billion-dollar idea right there.
Interesting statistic.
Isn't that just called a butt plug?
Yeah.
Yeah. Since I got my Garmin Fenix, I have 1,053 miles as of today.
Oh, good track. Job, man. How long does it take to print 3D print a butt plug, Joel? Depends on the size.
That's absolutely right.
Well, it also depends on the infill.
Yeah.
And the material.
Do you make it solid or is it hollow?
Depends on the material.
Yeah.
If you're printing it out of Teflon or TPU.
That's when you know you're
TPU.
You're talking to some serious 3D printing nerds. It doesn't matter what you're printing, they're going to talk about
it. Is it safe? Is it safe to use?
I would say no. No, those layer lines would tear your asshole up, dude.
TPU is soft. TPU is soft. But the problem is the same thing for TPU as for any other material, and why 3D printing isn't food safe unless you seal it in epoxy. Because it's got all those micro fissures in it, and the stuff would get stuck in there, and that's just nasty.
Yeah, you'd tear up your asshole.
Just from a chemical standpoint, I think they put ABS in red tattoo ink, and then they make Legos out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
Legos that plastic, shred your feet.
Yeah.
The plastics themselves might be, safe enough or whatever, but like I said, the problem is that you can't get it perfectly.
It'd be hard to keep clean. Not to mention the fact. You're usually printing with a brass nozzle, which has, guess what in it? Lead.
Well, you can get a steel nozzle.
Well, that's true, too.
But you should probably be using for Teflon anyway, if I remember right.
Dan, you should just buy a high-quality butt plug and forget about 3D printing.
Seriously. You should just buy a butt plug.
Those things are tested. I should go get a membership over there at the Makerspace and just start printing out butt plugs and see what they say.
Right.
Like, en masse, 500 of them at a time. Except for one machine where you're printing a giant one.
Yeah, how big does this need to be?
Have you seen my ass?
As big as you want it, man.
I'm going for the horse heads.
Right. Dude, I got an amazing gift in the mail today. My former manager, who hasn't been with the company for a few years now, I friended
talking
her
about
on
butt
Facebook.
Plugs, and then he's talking about the best gift he ever got.
Yeah, here it comes. Here it comes.
No, it's nothing like that. No, I posted my picture of when I got my road shoes, my ultra road shoes. And she said she had tried ultras and they didn't work for her. And she had some that she'd like to send me. And I got them today.
You have the same size feet?
Yeah, she was wearing men's 10 and a half. Yeah. So she's a big girl. So they all are all my size, and they're all one of them is actually the exact same pair of road shoes I've been using, which are the Olympus Vias. The others are Torrens. They're all the zero drop shoes, you know. And I don't know. One of them is an orange pair. I have no idea which one it is yet. I got to figure out which one it is. But they all are nice, and they all fit me well.
Torrens are road shoes, aren't they?
They are.
Yeah, I had a pair of those.
Yep. Yep. In fact, I went to the store and I wore a pair of two of the pair of Torrens are identical. They're black. I like them. And the other ones, and they're all like brand new, man. She like wore them, like maybe wore them for a race, and she didn't like how they made her feet feel. So, and I'm like, who buys four pairs of shoes and then not like how they feel and keeps them? And yeah, this is where it goes. If you want to buy good running shoes or trail shoes, buy them at REI, be a part of the co-op. Then if you don't like them, you can return them 30, 60, up to a year later, as long as they're not wore out, you know, and they'll give you your money back.
That makes no sense. Why the hell would you not return them within like a week or two?
I know.
Why would you wait like a year?
But it's a blessing to me, and I'm just fine taking them. She didn't want money for them. She just sent them to me. I'm like, that's very nice. Now I've got road shoes for the rest of the year, at least. Probably longer. Although I'm going to probably sign up for another 5K before too much longer. They have one called Gordy's Pumpkin Run in October. And it's a 5K, and one feature of it is, well, like, you know, how swag, you know, you get swag for a race, like a t-shirt or something. One of your pieces is swag. For this one's a pumpkin. And you get even better swag if you carry that pumpkin through the 5K. You get a medal that says Tough Pumpkin. So I'm going to go for the Tough Pumpkin Award.
There you go.
So, and I know I can do 5K. I've done it, and I've done several since, on mostly on the treadmill because it's too fucking cold. It was two this morning. It was two.
Oh, man, it's bad enough here.
Suck it. I take 30 over two.
And it's supposed to be down to like 10 next week. So
I'd still take that.
You know what? I'd take 10 over two, but I'd still prefer 70.
Well, yeah, good point.
Because we should get the show started, huh?
You think?
Yeah.
And I do have some technical shit to talk about, too.
Oh, good. We all
Sweet.
Do.
And it's, I do have something 3D printer related, but I also have something Linux related.
Cool.
Nice.
Dave.
Yeah.
You should 3D print a double-ended butt plug and then find somebody to have a tug of war with.
Isn't that like a dildo?
I don't know.
Just a shorter dildo?
I don't know. Ask Dave. He knows all
You
this
seem
stuff.
To have a lot of knowledge on this subject, Joel.
Yeah.
That's not a double-ended butt plug. It's a double-ended dildo. Get it
there
right.
You go.
Let me show you.
So what's the difference between a butt plug and a dildo?
The length? That's what I would think. I don't know. Fuck.
Dave? Is that true or false?
I got no idea.
Dave said taste.
Dave's like, I have no idea what these things you're talking about are.
Dave's all the taste after use.
I'm sure there's standards of identity, just like there is with food.
I'm pretty sure it's shape instead of length.
Yeah, form factor.
And remember, use water-based lube.
For what?
Any of that shit.
Okay. If you remember from last
show.
Night, right? Okay. Here we go. What is this? 1,000?
82.
Yeah, 1,082. Here we go.